Scripture and through question and answer. If you have a question or a comment, feel free to raise your hand or just jump right in, and I'll try to acknowledge you. If you don't get acknowledge you immediately, get my attention, and we'll move on. So the last half of chapter 7 is arguably the most difficult and least understood text in Ecclesiastes. There are those who see Solomon as a male chauvinist in this text. Others see him as suddenly a careless writer, and many simply skip over this section altogether. Solomon stresses that righteousness cannot be found in either things that we add into our lives or offer to God in order to please him, or by not doing certain things that we believe don't please God. Both seem to make sense when seen logically, but in order to be good solutions, they also must uphold the biblical scrutiny. Although the Old Testament law can look like righteousness by sacrifices, festivals, and etc., or by abstaining from foods, behaviors, and etc., righteousness by grace through faith was God's plan from the beginning. Any questions or comments with our introduction? Who would like to read Ecclesiastes 7, 14 through 29? It's a little long, but if you don't feel like reading all of it, you can stop and we'll get someone else to finish it. Okay, Shane.
I was standing behind you, man. All right, verse 14. When times are good, be happy. But when times are bad, consider. God has made the one as well as the other. Therefore, a man cannot discover anything about his future. In the meaningless life of mine, I have seen both of these. A righteous man perishing in his righteousness, and a wicked man living long in his wickedness. Do not be over-righteous, neither be over-wise. Why destroy yourself? Do not be over-wicked, and do not be a fool. Why die before your time? It is good to grasp the one and not let go of the other. The man who fears God will avoid all extremes. Wisdom makes one wise man more powerful than 10 rulers in a city. There is not a righteous man on earth who does what is right and never sins. Do not pay attention to every word people say, or you may hear your servant cursing you. For you know in your heart that many times you yourself have cursed others. All this I tested by wisdom, and I said, I am determined to be wise, but this was beyond me. Whatever wisdom may be, it is far off and most profound. Who can discover it? So I turned my mind to understand, to investigate and search out wisdom and the scheme of things, and to understand the stupidity of wickedness and the madness of folly. I find more bitter than death the woman who is a snare, whose heart is a trap, and whose hands are chained. The man who pleases God will escape her, but the sinner she will ensnare. Look, says the teacher, this is what I have discovered, adding one thing to another to discover the scheme of things. While I was still searching but not finding, I found one upright man among a thousand, but not one upright woman among them all. This only have I found. God made mankind upright, but men have gone in search of many schemes.
Okay, thanks, Shane. So let's dive into it, and we'll unpack it and go from there. And remember, I'm just the messenger. I'm not Solomon. Solomon's the one who's talking here, so I'm just the messenger. So when times are good or prosperity is good, how should people live? Verse 14. How does he start off? Sorry, what?
Happy.
Happy, yep. Joyful. Some translations say joyful. Why is he telling us that? Why is it good to be happy when things are going good?
It's going to get worse.
Yeah, and that's we're fixing to get there too, aren't we?
Isn't that kind of what we do sometimes when things are good? We get nervous, right?
We're waiting for the shoe's going to drop. The other shoe's going to drop.
Hey, just listen. Enjoy.
Yeah.
Enjoy the blessing, right? Enjoy
yeah.
the times.
Take advantage of it.
Even in James, he said, consider it pure joy when you encounter various trials.
while. So,
yeah.
I mean, happiness is not just something, or joy is not just something that comes to good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Something that, you know, I guess Solomon was pretty wise here, but maybe later on Jesus and the Holy Spirit had allowed people to be even wiser.
Maybe so. I mean, Solomon's considered the wisest person in the Bible, though, other than Jesus, right?
I don't know.
Oh, I thought we talked about that a previous week. Yeah, well, that's true. So, but good events allow us to enjoy our life, while bad events help us to think more seriously about our life. So what should we do in days of adversity? Verse 14, the latter part of 14. So if we're happy when things are good, how should we act when things are bad? Basically the same, isn't it? But what should our attitude be, Connie?
God made both.
He's in, like Gary said this morning, God's in control. You know, He has a plan. We don't understand it sometimes, but sometimes, as we've talked in other classes, God allows us to go through some of these bad times sometimes to test our faith. So,
I often wonder how it'll be in heaven, because if things are always good, there's no contrast. So how do you even know that something's good when there's nothing ever bad?
Because every day just gets better than one.
Yeah.
Well, if someone knows that you are going through a situation, you can help somebody else because of your attitude in that situation.
Yeah.
That you could help them. And I think we should always look at it that way, because you don't want to be the downer.
Correct.
Even though, like we've said, we've gone to visit people in the hospital. How are you doing?
Yeah.
You know, we're there to see them, but they're trying to lift you up. And that's what we're supposed to do. Because people that are not, that do not know us, they watch it, they don't watch it, but they pay attention to it because of your attitude. Even though you're down, you could help them in a situation. They may come to you and ask you, why are you so upbeat? Mm-hmm. Now you have a chance to minister. Mm-hmm. That's what we're supposed to be doing. It doesn't matter whether or not you're on your deathbed or not.
Yeah.
We're supposed to be ministering to people to help win them over to Christ. By us having a smile on our face when we go through adversities, that's the way of doing it.
Yeah. It's hard to always smile, though, when you're going through that adversity, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It is. But it's how you respond to things, not react. Respond
right.
to them.
There's a difference, yeah.
It's a big difference, and people pay attention to that.
Yeah. Yeah. Anybody else have a comment?
I think that's a big deal, because like the sermon, like what Bernard was saying, you know, we have a misunderstanding sometimes and think, well, when things are good, God is there.
Yeah.
God is always there.
Yeah.
And we can always look to God, and God is always with us, and God is always there. Just because times are good or times are bad, that doesn't change that.
All right.
God is always there, and it's our misunderstanding when we think God is only there when things are going right.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Anybody else? So what two things had Solomon seen in the days of his vanity? Verse 15. What two things had Solomon seen? Yeah, a man who obeys God's laws dies when he's young, and a wicked man seems to live for a long time. Another way to put it is, why do bad things happen to good people? Billy Joel had a song a few years ago, "Only the Good Die Young."
Question I have is, I've seen verses that say none are righteous.
Okay.
Then he later on says, everyone does evil.
Right.
Yeah. And indeed.
Actually, Solomon talks about this later on in this chapter.
He says in 20, indeed, there is no one on earth who is righteous.
Right.
So I think that explains why there's bad and good, because there's no perfect person.
Okay.
We're going to experience evil. We're going to experience bad times because there's evil in the world.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, but I think what Solomon is saying here goes, I mean, that's true, but I think what Solomon is saying here goes beyond that, in the sense that in all of our lives we've seen people who strive to do what's right, who strive to chase after God's will, and yet bad things happen to them, whether it's illness, death, or whatever. And then of course, it's real easy, especially in our days with media, we can definitely see the flip side when we see lots of people who aren't interested in God at all, who are chasing after evil, and they're doing very well.
Yeah, see?
Lots of money, and they're really popular. And so really what I think Solomon is getting at is if we witness these things that happen in life, and so it's our human nature maybe to say, why even chase after God when it looks like it might be better not to?
Yeah.
And I really think that's kind of where he's going here, is that we've seen these two extremes, but so we might question our faith in God because of it, and he's really, I think in this section he's challenging us to not pursue evil because it looks like a better path.
Yeah.
But to cling to God regardless of whether it's good times or bad times. And that's the righteous path.
What has Solomon said in earlier chapters we've talked about is an advantage of dying young. And he actually used an example of a baby dying. Why did Solomon say that was a good thing? Y'all remember?
They don't have to experience the evil and difficult.
The evil and pain and all that, the suffering that, as you live longer, you know, you usually have to go through it. So there are advantages. Someone turn to Isaiah 57, 1 and 2 actually, and read that. Isaiah 57, 1 and 2.
Righteous perish, and no one takes it to heart. The devout are taken away, and no one understands that the righteous are taken away to be spared from evil. Those who walk uprightly enter into peace. They find rest if they lie in death.
Okay. So according to Isaiah, no one seems to understand that God is protecting them from the evil to come. Like we were talking about a baby dying or a young person dying. There is an advantage in the long run. So, anybody else have a comment or question? So, against what does Solomon caution in verses 16 and 17? What is he cautioning? Cautioning us and others.
Not to be over righteous or over wise.
Okay.
Is there such a thing?
Is there? We'll talk about it. There's one word I'm looking for, and that's extremism. Not to go too far in either way, either being righteous or being wise. So if Solomon cautions us about extremism, what does it mean to grasp one thing and also not let go of the other? Verse 18. And your translation may say it a little bit different, but what does that mean? Grasp one thing and also not let go of the other. Because if we grasp evil, shouldn't we let go of evil? I mean, if we grasp good, shouldn't we let go of evil? But that's not what it sounds like he's saying, is it? Anybody? He's warning us not to be self-righteous. The teacher is warning the readers to not think too much about how good they are. They must not pretend to be wise while not trying to do wicked things. That makes sense?
So
That's it. That's it. That's, yeah. Be self-righteous. You know, not walk around like you know it all.
People seek that because, you know, because no one is perfect.
Exactly.
If you're claiming to be perfect and people see imperfections in you, that's a problem.
Yeah.
And especially if you think you know it all.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I like to say that the wisest and most righteous people I've known over my life were the people who were most acutely aware of their own sin and shortcomings.
Exactly. And they're usually very humble about that too. Yeah, I agree. Anything else? Well, how strong is wisdom? Verse 19. How strong is wisdom, according to Solomon? All right. Is that number 10 literal or figuratively? Figurative. Probably figurative. Yeah. Probably figurative. The number 10 may mean a number that is not definite, or it may be an exact number of rulers in a city. We don't know. He just used it. So what's wrong with, how is wisdom strong? How strong is wisdom? Wise people who give honor to God are strong and more powerful than any wise group of leaders. So someone who is strong in honoring God are more powerful than any group of leaders.
When you got God on your side, you really don't have anything to worry about.
Me plus God is a majority. So... you're right. Contemporary English puts it this way: wisdom will make you stronger than the 10 most powerful leaders in your city. So if God's on our side, we're in the majority. Is there anyone on earth who does not sin? Verse 20. Woohoo! That's an easy one.
Not today.
Not today. What does Romans 3:23 say? Someone turn and read Romans 3:23. I'm sorry?
All have sinned and come short of glory.
There you go, yeah. People everywhere sin, they do wrong things and they think wrong thoughts. So what should one not take to heart in verses 21 and 22?
What others say.
Yeah. Why is that not important, Connie? Why should we just let it roll off our back?
Well, you say that like that's so easy. Because I think we do care.
And we so, do, yeah.
And so it's hard.
Yeah.
Well, people can have a hidden agenda. They might say something to market something that they make money on.
Yeah.
And I mean, the best product is the one that you make money on. So, think about it. You don't want anybody to take, to discredit whatever it is you make or
yeah.
you do. And so that is sometimes the best product. One of the things I learned when I was in Amway years and years ago was that every product they made was the best one to market. And then I noticed that it was because people made money that they thought that.
Yeah.
Because when I did some of the trials, I found out that wasn't true.
When you actually start comparing them, huh?
Yeah. So, I mean, but that's true of just about anything. People
yeah.
always will favor something that gives them some sort of advantage.
Sometimes,
so
yeah,
they
you're right.
Careful what they do.
Yeah. So you know how to draw zero circles, then, don't you?
No,
you didn't catch it.
No, he didn't catch it.
He didn't catch it. They always draw, every Amway thing I've ever been to, they draw circles.
Oh.
Shane, did you have your hand up? I'm sorry.
Well, I was just going to say, I think this section is particularly speaks to today's times where there is a, with social media and all this stuff on the internet, and then to me, there's an over-focus on every word that every person
yeah.
says. everybody's looking for people to make that one wrong statement that they can jump on. And to me, that's part of what this is saying. It's saying, hey, you don't do everything right. You don't say everything right.
Yeah.
So you shouldn't live in an expectation that everyone around you is going to say everything right, do everything right, that they're always going to say nice things about you when you're not around. I mean, to me, that this is a little bit pointed towards forgiveness, in a sense, and being forgiving to other people, that what they say, and you know, won't always be, quote unquote, what is right.
Right.
Because what you say isn't always right.
True.
It seems today I can remember a time when there was a little bit more forgiveness, when it was like somebody said something was wrong, when people would kind of be like, you know, he didn't really mean it.
Yeah.
Now it's like every word anyone ever says, it's like, well, that's wrong.
Right.
So he's wrong, so he's out of it.
Yeah.
And then to me, what Solomon is saying is we shouldn't be like that.
Yeah. Take things out of context and run with it instead of digging into the truth.
Huh? It'll be so easily offended.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, people are so touchy these days. You could tell an Alabama joke and people say, okay, and go with it, right? Right, Roger?
Ben,
yes, ma'am.
I was listening to the news this morning. They were talking about Biden, right?
Mm-hmm.
They were saying something about CNN. The news guy was saying, be gracious to him because he's making what he's wrong decisions and doing everything. Inflation's high.
Yeah.
Be gracious. And something about hypocrisy. We have hypocrisy and we got to be forgiven.
Yeah.
Be gracious. I just thought that comment, you know, it's, yeah, people do things, say things, and are we supposed to be gracious and forgive, or that's what I thought of it. You know?
Yeah.
Does this have anything to do with what I just said?
No, I think you're okay, Terry.
They probably were gracious towards Trump.
They were saying that they weren't gracious towards Trump.
They weren't?
No. Because they were always opposing him. But he was taking care
of
him.
Yeah. There's forgiveness, too. If someone says something or does something, like sort of like Shane was talking about, mm-hmm. you know, instead of just blowing that up, you know, give the person benefit of the doubt, because they'll, and I'm trying to get political either way, this does not have to be politicized, but people's actions will show you what direction they're going in, okay? You may not pick it up the first couple of times,
right.
But over time, you'll see a pattern. I've made this, and this is no reflection on Gary or any other preacher, but I've always said, when you're listening to a preacher for the first time, you don't always know what they think about every subject in the Bible, okay? But over time, as you hear more and more lessons or sermons, you kind of know where they stand on some issues. And I believe that's that way politically, too, on the political side, too. So, does that make sense? Okay, thank you. anybody else have a comment?
I think one of the reasons we pray for wisdom is so that we can see that before it's too late.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Good. And we should be praying for that wisdom every day. Why, number 9, why should people not listen to every word that is spoken? We've kind of touched on it. But what does Solomon say in 21?
I think kind of what he's saying is you might not like what you hear.
Exactly. Yeah. They may be talking about you and you may say, oh, they're saying good things about me when in reality they're not. Like, you know, maybe they're putting you in your place. And
I think he goes on to say, you know, you curse too, right? So you talk bad about people.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes people just need their space to maybe vent and you don't have to hear everything. I like to say, I'm careful to ask a question that I don't want the answer to.
Exactly. Oh, I tell Susan that all the time. If you don't want to know the answer, don't ask the question. Any other comments about verse 21? In his effort to be wise, what did Solomon find in 23 through 25? What did Solomon find when he's trying to be wise? Yeah, it was beyond him. And here he is, the wisest man supposedly in the Bible other than Jesus, and he's saying there's still stuff out there he doesn't know. So, verse 23, what does the phrase "all this" or "these things" refer to? And here again, you may have translation-wise, maybe it may be worded a little bit different. But in verse 23, when he says "all of this" or "these things," what is he referring to? 23 says, "I tested all this with wisdom." He's talking about all this stuff we just talked about, right? It's sort of like all this stuff we've been talking about. I tested it. Here's what I came up with. So it's not just words, he's actually tried to put them into play. I'm sorry? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So where is wisdom? Verse 23 and 24. Where is wisdom? Far off. How far off is that, Connie?
So far that you just don't even know how you can find out.
Exactly. What he just said. Yeah. Even a wise person cannot be perfect. There is a limit to what a person can understand. So here again, when you think you know it all, there's a lot more out there still. So what did Solomon turn his mind or directed his heart to do in verse 25? Sorry, Bernard?
Investigate.
Okay, investigate.
Search. Of things.
Yeah. Investigate. He seeked out wisdom and he seeked out an explanation.
Mine says, understand the stupidity of wickedness.
Okay. He's trying to learn more about the wickedness and the stupidity of it. Does anybody else have a different translation that says something a little different?
I've learned that it's foolish to be evil and crazy to act like a fool.
Okay. That's pretty blunt. Any comments? So what did Solomon find more bitter than death in verse 26? What did Solomon find more bitter than death? All right, what does that mean, Shane? What does it mean to have a woman in snares, whose heart is in snares? What is a snare?
Trap.
I mean, based on some of Solomon's other writings, I've always taken that to mean that this is that deceitful woman that he talks about in other places, that evil woman or the sinful woman who's out there calling to the young man, the woman.
Okay.
You know, Jezebel. So I've taken
Jezebel.
Yeah. Okay.
The type of woman that tries to trap you and ensnare you, it's not the righteous, holy woman, it's the...
We would call it a seduction situation. Anybody else have a thought?
I just wonder why it limits that to women.
That's what I wonder.
He's fixing to really open it up here in a minute. That's true.
I mean, Solomon had a lot of trouble with women.
He didn't have a good history with women, did he?
His biggest criticism is always starts with women. I mean, that's where his biggest criticism always comes from.
It's fixing to get, we're fixing to really get into it here in a minute. So
he was like that with all the wives.
Well, we'll talk about that. He explains why in just a minute. But in verse 26, the teacher thought that some women want to catch men and see them do wrong things. This kind of woman would prevent people who want to escape from her but can't, because as if she tied up people with chains. Some translations will say chains, while some say fetters. But this is the type of woman that seduces you to do evil, and then once you do that, they've got you in their grasp. They don't let go. He also talks about this in Proverbs chapters 5 and 7. He talks about the foolish men who agree when a woman suggests wrong things to them. So we must be wise and not allow false ideas to attract us. These false ideas and these snares don't necessarily come from just women, though, do they? I mean, us men, we do it too. Some of us do. But we do the same thing. So who can escape a woman? Verse 26. How does he tell us to get away from these women?
Become one.
Become one. I think Terry would disagree with that.
I was kidding. Who is with God, we escape
her. Yep. Everybody hear what she said?
No.
Can you repeat it?
The man who is with God will escape.
Man who is with God. Talks about he who pleases God. Yes. So if we respect God, then we will avoid the wrong thoughts, which is difficult. We know that these thoughts are like a trap, and bad women will try to persuade foolish men. And I'll turn that around. Bad men will also try to persuade foolish women. So I don't want to be a sexist, Terry.
It sounds though like he was speaking out of experience here.
Absolutely. And I think so.
Him being a wise person and still falling for it, I don't know. I think that we have to be careful and think, I'm a godly person and I'm immune to this.
Yeah, I'm untouchable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, maybe that's what he meant by being overly wise.
Yeah. 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 Right. It's their fault. What did Adam say in the garden? He said it was Eve's fault.
He said that woman.
Yeah, that woman. Yeah. Yeah. So we like to play the blame game and not accept responsibility. Any other comments before we get into 28 and 29?
You're doing a lot of dancing today, Leah.
Well, I listened to coming home yesterday. I had burned two sermons from this text, different people, but the sermons were from this text. And they were, I mean, the target was the same, but they came at it from two different directions. So I'm kind of giving you a little bit of all theirs and mine and everything else I've got. So, okay, number 15. In his search, what had he found? Verse 28. What did Solomon find? And this, by the way, is probably what I read and heard. This is probably one of the most misunderstood sections in Ecclesiastes. Good people are hard to find. It's one way of putting it. But he actually targets different groups.
He says he finds one upright man among a thousand.
All right, he finds one man among a thousand. What did he not find in verse 28?
Not one woman.
So that means there's only one good man in a thousand and not any good women anywhere?
Well, he might have been looking in the wrong place for the women.
All right. Now, When Solomon says that he looked at 1,000 women and couldn't find anyone righteous, what is that group? What group is he looking at? We've touched on it. His group, his harem.
Yeah.
His 700 wives and 300 concubines. So apparently in that 1,000 women that he has around him on a daily basis, not one of them... All of them, let me back up, all of them were evil, or he considered them evil.
Like he was very
No, you would.
But he chose them, right?
Exact, far as we know, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And still looking.
If you were one of the wives.
Yeah, if you,
oh, okay.
If you were one of the women.
Yeah.
And you had to compete with 699 other women. You might be a little bitter,
I don't know. One of the women would have to speak for that. I don't know.
Well, Lynn apparently found one, didn't he? Write Song of Solomon?
Yeah. Yeah.
But, I mean, as we read it, we got to be reminded. It's poetry.
Yep. The teacher searched but found only a few good men, but could not find a woman who was completely good. Perhaps that was because Solomon's own experience with his many wives. But there were wise women in the Bible who were good, like Naomi and Abigail. And we certainly would think that Solomon knew females who were good people, good followers of God, as far as we know. I mean, we would assume that. I read this. The one man he's referring to is Jesus. It's a great rarity to find a good man, because many walk in the broad way, but few find the straight gate and narrow way. But this one of thousand is probably meaning Jesus, who is the chiefest among 10,000s. We read that in Job and Song of Solomon, who is superior to angels and men. Maybe interpreted one man, the Messiah, among all the sons of men, have I found free from original sin, but one woman among all the daughters of Eve I have not found clear of it. Talking about the original sin. So, any thoughts, comments, questions? Can you see where this could be, where today, in today's atmosphere, this could be a controversial subject? It does sound kind of male chauvinist, doesn't it?
The specifics, I think, are tough, but the general point is a statement of depravity, right?
Right.
That's what he's really driving. Right. And whether there's a little tongue-in-cheek with the man and wife stuff, or whatever, it's just his personal, it's whatever that is, overall, it's just a big statement about depravity.
Exactly. That's the point, so, in my opinion. Anybody else? So, well, what else did he find in verse 29?
God made mankind upright.
Okay.
But man has gone to many schemes.
All right. What are some of these schemes that man has gone to?
His own ways.
Okay. Absolutely. What does it mean for God made man upright? I mean, does that mean we're standing up on two legs versus leaning over on four? What does that mean?
It means God's intent in creating mankind is for man to follow the righteous path.
Okay.
God's intent in all creation was for creation to be reflective of all the things that are right about God and are praiseworthy.
Okay.
So the intent that God had made was for it to be this grand place that worships God, praises God, follows God, holds God upright, and that was the intent.
Right.
But as he goes on to say, that's not what we chose to do.
Anybody else? God created people who were honest and fair. The Hebrew word for fair also means straight, but this whole section is about people who do bad things, so this verse may refer to people who are not content to have good, straight characters. Number 17, God has made man upright, but they have sought out many. In verse 29, what do you think this means?
Mm-hmm. We are always looking for something different. selfish something, and the paths of man are many.
Correct.
I think that's easy to see. When we go out and look at the world today, there are many, many paths. And of course, everyone out there likes to say, all these paths are right, all these paths are equal, all
yeah.
these paths are the same. But we know from the Bible that's just not true.
We're looking for that greener grass a lot of times, aren't we?
King James says, God made man upgraded the outside of many inventions.
Yeah. 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 Verse 29, the contemporary English starts out, says, I did learn one thing, where the international standard says, I have discovered one thing. Some translation says found out or figured out. Just a difference in translation. Instead, people use their clever thoughts to discover things for themselves. Then their minds became bent. This means that they were not fair or honest. They plotted wicked schemes. Kind of need to bring that together. Any thoughts, questions, comments about Ecclesiastes 7, 14 through 29? Even though Ecclesiastes 7, 14 through 29 is considered difficult passages, there is some Christian literature that state that your behavior, your prayers, and your righteous living or giving can ensure from God a long life, prosperity, and whatever else you want. That's from Jeffrey Myers. It's only through the sacrifice of Jesus that we can be truly righteous. Any righteousness that is occupied with changing the will of God is the wrong kind of righteousness. So we have to watch that. Anything else? Next week, we are going to have a guest speaker. Paul Reganathan is going to be in town. And I've heard he's going to preach next week, but he's also going to teach the class next week. So in past, what he's done is preached the sermon.
Darren didn't know that.
Was I not supposed to tell him that? I'm sorry.
I'm not aware that he's preaching next week.
David Bailey said he wanted to preach and teach. Okay, just be ready.
So don't have a lesson.
Don't have a lesson. Yeah. David Bailey said he wanted both. I apologize. I don't know. So
he did want both.
Okay.
And
that hasn't been determined yet.
We had a discussion. Gary will continue to preach next time.
Okay.
Paul will get the Sunday.
Paul will teach then. So what he's done in the past, he'll usually give a kind of an update of what's going on in India and usually have a Q&A session. So if you have any questions about his ministry in India, come with those. So anyway, Paul will be here next week, be in town. Is his whole family coming or just him, or do you know?
He didn't respond.
Okay. So we won't have class Ecclesiastes until 2 weeks, July the 31st. So you'll need to make note of that on your handout. I already printed it out until I learned this last night when I got back. So
that class will probably be...
Yeah, we'll probably be in the auditorium. Because we have that graduate
school.
Well, we have the grad. Next week is the 24th.
Right, but the following week is.
The 31st. Okay.
We have that still going on back here.
Okay.
So probably in there.
Okay. Well, I was thinking, I don't know what we'll probably still have class in here next week because lunch is just be a few of us. So it won't be like the big potluck.
Unless he has a slideshow or something, it might be better in there.
We can do it here. We'll worry about that. I know I got the week off, so. So, any comments, questions? We've gone a couple minutes over. I apologize for that. So, all right. Well, my time's up. I thank you for yours. Have a blessed week and be safe.